paper 14, section 3, which is old single column, page 155. All right. So, don't think we need too much for intro. Maybe just remember that the previous section was much meatier than you initially suspected, and that they really used that section to give you a lot of very direct linkage to, relevancy to you. That, like we were saying, it seems to be talking just about the structure of Havona, the quote-unquote constitution of Havona. But Havona is, is the example of harmony. It's the pre-evolutionary expression of harmony that all the evolutionary domains are evolving toward. That pattern universe, that harmony. And so the constitution of Havona is the internal constitution that you are attempting to consecrate yourself toward. They're one and the same thing. In Havona, in ways that we can't even imagine, matter, mind, and spirit are a perfect harmony. And the individuality that we are, should be striving through the associativity, the mind that we've been given, to be striving ever toward greater unity, but not leaving that individuality behind, bringing the three together into a harmony. Okay, so in the wake of really reminding us then of why it's important even now to have a better understanding of the nature of the central universe, they're going to just get a little bit more into the day in a life sort of nature, of the central universe. So that's what the Havona Worlds is about.
3, the Havona Worlds. Concerning the government of the central universe, there is none. Havona is so exquisitely perfect that no intellectual system of government is required. There are no regularly constituted courts, neither are there legislative assemblies. Havona requires only administrative direction. Here may be observed the height of the ideals of true self-government.
Okay, now that first paragraph, especially here, is an awful lot like what we just finished, like I said. They just got you really spun up in thinking about how this is relevant to you. Don't let go of that. And say, well, okay, I can turn that thought off. This is an extremely relevant paragraph to the modern consciousness. Because 2,000 years ago, we had a spiritual uplifter come and got a lot of us much more spun up on a relationship to unity consciousness. We have a growing problem of people thinking that they live in Havona. Okay? That they live in a domain of, perfect ideals directly manifested, almost with no need to translate ideals into ideas. It's such a pure domain. Okay. And notice, some of the details in here too. Okay, so first of all, one of the details is they purposely italicized self there, so that you don't just think self-government. Oh yeah, like the United States is attempting to consecrate themselves to a greater self-government. No, self-government. Not so much the Constitution of the United States for the Declaration of Independence. Now, why are we trying to construct a Constitution to manifest greater self-government? Because we're trying to follow what that guy 4,000 years ago, or 2,000 years ago, told us to do. You know, what Jesus said we should strive for when he came as that spiritual uplifter. No, writing the law in your heart. Okay? The reason that, you know, that there's no external government per se is because the law is perfectly written in everyone's heart there.
In Havona.
Whether or not you were a native or you've been allowed in. Okay? You govern yourself. You have mastered yourself perfectly. Okay? And because every self is mastered perfectly, because the law is perfectly written in every heart, there's no need to, you know, to have an externalized phenomenon to fill in the gaps, you know, with what people have written in their hearts. And of course, if no one has written anything in their hearts, it all has to be externalized and quite totalitarian. Okay, so the less we write, have the law written in our hearts, know what you can expect. You can expect a totalitarian system to make up for your failing to challenge yourself properly, to have the law written in your heart. So, notice the ideals of true self-government, all these pure words. And then notice that additional little detail. So when you have idealists who start thinking that they're living in Havona, all of these facts of perfection are just a given in their mind. Okay, the first thing that they start thinking is to try to sort of manifest what they envision is dumping the legislative and the judicial branches and embodying it all in the executive branch. See? They don't recognize it, but they literally are consciousizing the fact of Havona. In Havona, you don't have a judicial or a legislative branch. You have just an executive branch. Okay? We can't think outside of the cosmos. We are part of the cosmos. You know, and you will consciousize the facts of the cosmos. All the language that I'm using right now has come down from above to me. I didn't pull that up out of the dirt. Okay? And we super consciously pick up on the facts of Havona. And we delusionally, you know, try to manifest them. Okay? So just notice so the subtext is the pathology of someone who is trying to ignore facts in an evolutionary domain and pretend that we live in an eternal domain that is, you know, or at least a domain that's post-evolutionary, you know, that we've reached the eventually, you know, and now we can just manifest pure ideals. No need to downstep them to ideas. Okay, so, yeah, there's just, you know, that whole cry for peace through despotism that you hear, even, you know, taking it that far, where you see an all-powerful executive as being able to just establish peace by fiat, you know, where you envision some human is an eternal of days, basically, one of those rulers of a Havona world, that executive, not just a supreme and executive, an ultimate executive. Remember, we were talking about the eternals of days. Okay, so that's another reason why they tell us the things in here. You know, always ask yourself, how does this bear upon the world around me? This is an emergency revelation. It's speaking to the issues in play. It's like, well, this is just talking about a central universe that's so far away that no one even knows, you know, astronomically that it exists. How could this be at all relevant? No, it's the pattern universe. It's all relevant. Everything that we are comes from the central universe. Everything that everything is comes from the central universe. It's the pattern for everything. So it's a pattern for our positive thoughts and the pattern, you know, in a twisted way, because of our free will, for our negative notions. You know, we twist Havona to get our negative pathologies. You know, or we recognize Havona and strive for it, but stay grounded in the facts of now. All right, so they're very purposely having a transitional paragraph like that from what you should have in your mind after the previous section.
There is no need of government among such perfect and near-perfect intelligences. They stand in no need of regulation, for they are beings of native perfection, interspersed with evolutionary creatures who have long since passed the scrutiny of the supreme tribunals of the superuniverses.
Notice the little paragraphs here. So let's pull a little thought out of that. Not quite as extensive as that first one. But, just make sure we're on the page they want us to be on. So perfect and near perfect. You know, so those, the near, quote unquote, near perfect ones, the ones that are still ascending, that have come up from the super universes, passing through Havona to get to paradise. What was the test, quote unquote, that ascending mortal had to pass in order to get into the gates of the central universe? Yeah, that's obviously proof. And it's a particular flavor of perfection.
Yeah, perfection of purpose.
Perfection of purpose. Okay. You have, like we've talked about so many times, you have a twofold consecration that you're working on, starting here in this, you know, initial mortal life. You're trying to more and more fully consecrate your will to the perfect will of God the Father, and you're trying to also get started with consecrating your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. So you have this twofold consecration. And they sort of go back and forth. You kind of leverage off of them, you know, sort of in an oscillating fashion. Okay? And you have finished the ascension relative to that consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father before you enter Havona. You've finished that. And so in Havona, you're making that, you're leveraging off of that perfected consecration relative to the Father to do the final consecration of your mind to the universal harmony of the cosmos. And that's all you need. You don't have to have finished your mindal consecration in order to fit in to what's going on in Havona. You just need to have that perfect consecration of your will, the perfection of purpose. All right, and long since passed the scrutiny of the supreme tribunals of the superuniverses. Okay, remember, and I want to mention this here because it's going to come up. We're going to mention about the Eternals of Days here next. Okay, so the supreme tribunals, the Ancients of Days, they are only of supreme nature. They are very directly supreme tribunals, not ultimate. You go the next notch up to the Eternals of Days, then you bring in ultimate, nature. So. Very literally, we've gone through the Ancients of Days with supreme nature, and we've passed that test. And now we're going to work in the domain of the Eternals of Days, where it's supreme and ultimate. We take it up a notch. But they're not God, remember. Ancients of Days are God. Eternals of Days are not God. They're not personalized deity.
They're just deity.
They're persons. And they're divine, very divine, ultimate divinity, but they're not deity. Okay?
The administration of Havona is not automatic, but it is marvelously perfect and divinely efficient. It is chiefly planetary and is vested in the resident eternal of days. Each Havona sphere being directed by one of these Trinity origin personalities. Eternals of days are not creators, but they are perfect administrators. They teach with supreme skill and direct their planetary children with a perfection of wisdom bordering on absoluteness.
See, so obviously if they're not God, it's not shouldn't be surprising that they're not creators. See? Okay. And so they mention supreme, and then you know when they say perfection of wisdom bordering on absoluteness, yes, that's the ultimate nature.
So what about their planetary children?
Well, they don't have children. I mean, there's Havonan, you know, there's Havonan natives, and, you know, we're going to read about them in a little bit. They're, in many ways, kind of like us. They're sort of the reciprocals of us. You know, and they're very much like us once we're perfected. We're sort of on equal footing then, the perfect and the perfected. Just two different flavors of the same phenomenon. And we're going to, in order to get from perfecting to perfected, we're going to leverage off of those perfect beings. The super additive consequence of the relationship of our perfectingness to their perfectness is our perfectedness. And that's literally how you can be perfected, is because it's a super additive consequence of that relationship of perfecting to perfect. Okay, so you need them. And of course, if you need them to become perfected, they're getting something from you in the process. Because they're also evolving, growing.
I'm wondering why it says they teach with supreme skill and direct their planetary children with the perfection of wisdom, bordering on absoluteness. So they taking all...
Right, okay, the reason that they say children is they very much engage all the beings on their world, whether they're ascenders like we will be one day, or anyone else that's there, in a fatherly mode. They're like the fathers of the Havona worlds. So in that sense that they're a father-like engagement, there's children relative to that quote-unquote father. Okay, and of course, the subtext there is if there's a father of that world, there's probably a mother of that world too. Yeah, and that's something that you unpack when you, you know, figure out the details of the central universe. Who's the mother? So you know the father is the eternal days. So yeah, that's why they say children. And when I said, you know, I was thinking you were thinking in a more literal sense. You know, they haven't procreated. You know, I mean, you notice they didn't. They don't even create, let alone procreate. Okay, so they're just the rulers, the fathers of those spheres.
The billion spheres of the central universe constitute the training worlds of the high personalities native to Paradise and Havona, and further serve as the final proving grounds for ascending creatures from the evolutionary worlds of time. In the execution of the Universal Father's great plan of creature ascension, the pilgrims of time are landed on the receiving worlds of the outer or seventh circuit. And subsequently, to increase training and enlarged experience, they are progressively advanced inward, planet by planet and circle by circle, until they finally attain the deities and achieve residence on Paradise. At present, although the spheres of the seven circuits are maintained in all their supernal glory, only about 1% of all planetary capacity is utilized in the work of furthering the Father's universal plan of mortal ascension. About 0.1% of the area of these enormous worlds is dedicated to the life and activities of the core of the finality, beings eternally settled in light and life, who often sojourn and minister on the Havona worlds. These exalted beings have their personal residences on paradise.
Yes, that's kind of interesting. They just gave you a little bit of numerical sense of how much else is going on besides the ascension scheme, you know, or even the post-ascension activities of the finaliters. Altogether, it's still a small, very small fraction of everything that's going on. And you know, so in other words, most of what's going on in Havona, or, you know, the central universe in general, is unrevealed in the fifth epical revelation because it doesn't directly concern the ascension scheme.
Also, wouldn't it indicate that the entire, if not experiment, but the entire occurrence, our ascension, is very early. The project is very, very, very new, and until much later.
Well, I mean, that's a little hard to say about how much it might vary over the course of the evolution of the grand universe. I mean, probably the more significant element would be how much the capacity those worlds need in order to start handling the outer space levels. You know, that would be the majority of the issue in play.
We're still pretty early on in this game.
Yeah, and, you know, and obviously the finaliters could begin to play an ever greater role on those worlds, on more of those worlds, as the grand universe gets closer to light and life. So the percentage that you might expect to have the greatest evolution would be that 0.1% number, rather than so much the 1% number, because that's kind of the whole point of the core of the finality. They're building up to be these very key components of the complete transformation of everything. You know, the seeds of the reformation of all things, you know, as everything transcends the finite. So when the grand universe is settled in light and life and the whole transcendence of everything occurs, the entire central universe is going to be reorganized. And so the finalers will be playing a big role, I'm sure, in that whole-scale reorganization of the central universe. Just like before you had the super universes, the order of things in the central universe was totally different than what it is now. You know, every being that was already in existence that, you know, then came out to work in the super universes, see, was in some different mode, you know, in the central universe before that. And what that mode was, you know, who knows. But you had all these beings, and, you know, and then you finally create the super universe level. And it's like, okay, you know, you go out there and you go out here, and, you know, and then let's rearrange everything in the central universe. You know, it was a whole scale change of the whole order of things. Yeah, Pam, you got something?
We come from this very lowly place, all of us, all the mortals and all the planets.
Slime.
Yeah, and then they, you know, emerge to this glory, you know, I mean, yeah. And they have God inside of them. They fuse with God. I mean, what magnificent creatures will we become if we make it?
Yeah, and see, in that thinking, just, you know, what you were just saying there is what I mean by the seeds. You know, take the concept of the grand universe settled in light and life and condense it, you know, into little foretastes of the feast to come. That's what finaliters are. They're little condensations, you know, of that whole. Okay, that's why they word it that way, so that you get that notion, you know, to describe them as being settled in light and life like that. Okay, so that you make the connection that's what finality means. Okay, now maybe just mention in the context here, don't forget, there's the whole second half of your universe career as a finaliter. You finish the whole perfection leg, both in terms of the consecration of your will and the consecration of your mind. You get that whole ascension perfection leg done. Then you have the second half of completion. Completion follows perfection. So there's a completing of your relationship with the grand universe quantitatively that builds upon the perfection relative to the grand universe qualitatively. So that's kind of the difference between the perfection leg and the completion leg is a kind of a quality and a quantity relationship to the grand universe. See, so in quality, you're settled in light and life. You're like the grand universe will one day be. But you haven't acquired a full quantitative relationship because you've only been in one super universe, for instance. And so you've got the whole process of the horizontal engagement to achieve a relationship quantitatively to the whole. To the whole. Yeah. All right. Okay. And then just also that little thing, you know, even if you're sojourning and ministering in the Havona worlds or, you know, out in the super universes, you know, don't ever forget the finaliters, their residence is actually on paradise. So, yeah, that's the actual, you know, place that has your, you know, a name on a door somewhere. Okay.
Paradise is where we'll reside.
That will be your residence, you know.
You're
and
it, visiting the Havona worlds.
Well, while you're doing everything out in the super universes and everything, that's your residence.
Once you're a finaliter,
that's your residence. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Paradise sucks.
So you're always going out and coming back to home base and going out. You know, it's not just going out and, you know, I mean, you are definitely going to be in a mode where you're going to be touching bases, you know, home base regularly. Okay.
Not to change the subject too much, but when we're going, I mean, are we going to be on our own velocity? Are we going to be able to go without an angel taking us?
Yeah. Remember, that's, and we're, you know, we're about to get a little bit of that, how we're building up to that as we're going through Havona. But the whole core of 1,000 finaliters, company, I suppose I should say, you know, working group of 1,000 finaliters, you know, all head out on their own, under their own locomotion, their own ability to engage the energy currents and ride them, surf them, whatever you want to say, to get from point A to point B.
The planetary construction of the Havona spheres is entirely unlike that of the evolutionary worlds and systems of space. Nowhere else in all the grand universe is it convenient to utilize such enormous spheres as inhabited worlds. Triada physical constitution, coupled with the balancing effect of the immense dark gravity bodies, makes it possible so perfectly to equalize the physical forces and so exquisitely to balance the various attractions of this tremendous creation. Anti-gravity is also employed in the organization of the material functions and the spiritual activities of these enormous worlds.
Okay, so pretty straightforward thing about, again, remember, it's a threefold material structure, not a dual one like out here. So it's a triada. And you have the dark gravity bodies so that, you know, to help balance this. But, you know, the bottom line does come down to anti-gravity still. Okay, it's still going to take the power beings that have anti-gravity nature to be able to actually sustain the equilibrium, the material equilibrium there. But notice the little thing thrown in. It's also spirit anti-gravity. You know, the spirit substance is only in equilibrium there because spirit anti-gravity is being employed also. You know, the sentence has to be worded that way. You know, there would be, this book would be an error if it just said material anti-gravity. Because you, as I just saying, they tell you point blank that this is the embodiment of harmony between matter, mind, and spirit, okay, in Havona. So you don't have any sort of a imbalance between how those two basic substances, matter and spirit, are involved in the system. They're going to be on equal footing, very much like the equal footing of the spirit substance of the Eternal Sun and the substance of the Isle of Paradise. You know, that kind of equal footing. So to just, you know, think about the complexity of that of the beings that are balancing all that. I mean, they can't just look at the matter and balance it. You know, you have to balance all the spirit at the same time and the super additive consequence of the relationship between the two all at the same time. Okay. So, in a very extremely obviously active control. I mean, if any of those beings blinked for a second, you know, the dark gravity bodies would rip that whole universe apart. Okay? So it's an eternally stable fact because of this perfect, right, you know, control.
Don't they say that those beings, we would find it hard to relate to them because they're just always, to us,
very
they seem always
businesslike. They better be. Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, so that's kind of the real zinger there, you know, is noticing the spiritual on equal footing with the material. All right.
The architecture, lighting and heating, as well as the biologic and artistic embellishment of the Havona spheres are quite beyond the greatest possible stretch of human imagination. You cannot be told much about Havona. To understand its beauty and grandeur, you must see it. Mm-hmm. But there are real rivers and lakes on these perfect worlds.
Again, notice it's all these little paragraphs. That's, you know, that's always a clue that don't, well, it didn't seem to be anything there. No, there must be something because they put it in a little paragraph. They wanted you to stop and then process that, just that little bit of words. Okay. The first thing is we were getting all mystical minded when they were telling us about light without heat, and it's like woo, it's all fan. No, you still need heat. Okay, it's not like you've transcended the need for heat. It's just that the sun's worlds don't emit light and heat at the same time. The two are separate and separately managed, the light and the heat. You know, so that's kind of a real grounding statement to mention that there's heating in the central universe. Okay, it's obviously going to be very fancy, but you know, literally you'll get cold if the power beings don't heat the place. Okay.
What's
the
biologic embellishment?
Okay, yeah. So there's all kinds of vegetative, you know, garden type artistry, you know, as well as non-organic artistry. You know, material. And of course, it's not just matter, it's also spirit substance, you know, being used as a substance in the art forms. Okay? All right? And of course, it's not going to be, oh, here's a really nice material exhibit, and here's a really nice spirit substance exhibit. The two are perfectly blended in some way. See, nothing is, there's no dichotomy there. And so, in order to have material embellishment, you also have to have spirit substance embellishment. The two have to be together in some incredible harmony of substance, of energy, of presence.
The way it feels to be in the redwoods.
Right? We get little senses of how we'll be able to one day experience something that has both together. Because we can feel a relationship to unity while we're looking at something beautiful or majestic, you know, grand. It'll just be that there won't be that difference between the two where one is kind of just internal and the other, you know, they'll both be just completely external and you'll have this full engagement of it and it'll just be so incredible.
Chris, mm-hmm. If there's water, I mean, there's real rivers and lakes.
Okay, but notice you read that in there. Do you see the word water in the paragraph? Yeah. Okay, so I was just going to mention that. So the first thing that you've got to wonder is like, okay, what exactly are they suggesting? I mean, your first thought is that there's some sort of triada, you know, threefold energy system analog. Otherwise, you know, it would be kind of misleading for them to call them rivers and lakes. I suppose that's what you should assume, at least to begin with, is there's some kind of liquid that plays a role like water does here. I mean, after all, if you've got plants and stuff, I mean, there's probably, know, yeah, they're going to be plants, you know, way different than what we know for plants, but they have to be watered, quote unquote. There has to be some sort of nourishment and stuff. I mean, at least that's what we'd have to assume. The real great thing there, I mean, that's all a wonderful little question mark. But the real zinger is the adjective. Did you notice the adjective? It didn't say there are actual rivers and lakes. It said there are real rivers and lakes. Okay? What was that test you had to pass to get in? Perfection of purpose. Everything in Havona is perfectly purposed. It's not just an actuality. It's a perfect reality. So the rivers and lakes there are perfectly purposed rivers and lakes. They aren't just, well, you know, water happened to rain over there and it's trickling down this hillside. And there's nothing random about it. And that, so not just the rivers and lakes, but everything, you know, because as well as the biologic and artistic embellishment, you know, architecture. Okay, I mean, remember, there absolutely everything in the central universe is artificial. There's not one shred of quote-unquote naturalness there, you know, in the sense that we use that word, where, you know, it just kind of does that by itself. No, I mean, the entire central universe was constructed by the act of God. It was made, okay? And so just the basic substrate of everything was made by the three deities. And then all of the details embellishing that raw clay, every jot and tittle of it is specifically requested by the Eternal of Days. The Eternal of Days, you know, declares where every automaton is going to be, okay? And you'll kind of, well, here, let me just say it right now. Notice how the next paragraph, spiritually, these worlds are ideally appointed. To use the word appointed for that finish, he points at that, and he points at that. He's pointed at every single thing, and it is as he declares it should be. And each one of those rules, remember, is absolutely unique because it's an expression of his absolute unique personality. He points as a person, a billion different, totally appointed. See, nothing is just random. He's pointed at every blade of grass. Everything there is exactly as he demands it to be.
Specified
by the Eternal Days.
I was just going to say for, you know, new people like Mike's sake that there are a billion of these worlds. So there's plenty of room for variety.
they're all unique.
Yeah, they're all unique.
Absolutely unique. Yeah. And we'll see a little bit more about the pattern universe function of those and get into the get a little bit further on here in the paper. Anyway, so just see, notice those are the, you know, real zingers, the word real, and it's heated. See, so it's just a contrast between perfectly purposed rivers and lakes, but it still has to be heated, it's for us, our spiritual consciousness wants to pretend that we don't even have a body, we don't need to be clothed, we don't need to be fed, if you get really idealistic, you get off on these tangents. It's like, no, the highest level, you still will get cold if someone doesn't tend to the heating system.
Spiritually, these worlds are ideally appointed. They are fittingly adapted to their purpose of harboring the numerous orders of differing beings who function in the central universe. Manifold activities take place on these beautiful worlds, which are far beyond human comprehension.
So, they say that basically twice there in those two paragraphs. Again, and they kind of gave you the numerical pretext for that. It's a very small percentage as you can even hope to crudely imagine. Okay, so...
When we're flying out there, you know, in the super universe, how are we going to stay warm then? Think about
that. Well, you know, like I said, you're connected to an energy current. So,
probably tapping off of it.
Yeah, yeah. The heater is within, yeah.
For creatures of the central universe, there are seven basic forms of living things and beings on the Havona worlds, and each of these basic forms exists in three distinct phases. Each of these three phases is divided into 70 major divisions, and each major division is composed of 1,000 minor divisions, yet with other subdivisions, and so on. These basic life groups might be classified as 1. Material, 2. Morontial, 3. Spiritual, 4. Absonite, 5. Ultimate, 6. Co-absolute, and 7. Absolute.
Okay, remember I, when we were at the end of the previous paper, I pointed ahead to this. Right at the end of the paper, the author, the Perfecter of Wisdom, was commenting about how I observe such an, you know, how he can observe an amazing interassociation of personality performances on all 7 levels of universe reality. You know, that expression, 7 levels of universe reality, is these 7 levels. Okay, and I mentioned at the time, see, those first 3 is basically the threefold actuality of the finite. So there's sort of 3 phases of the finite, 3 levels of the finite, you know, and then 2 of the absonite, you know, dash or ultimate dash absonite and absolute dash co-absolute. Yeah. So you have, you know, you have 3 basic blocks, 1 broken up into 3 and the other 2 broken into 2s.
Where is that?
Just right at the end of the previous paper is one of the examples of them referring to the 7 levels of universe reality. Just right at the second to the last sentence of the paper.
They're talking about life groups there. You don't think they're talking about the functional levels?
No, they're not talking about the functional levels. Yeah, see that, and they're also not talking about those 7 levels that are up there in paper 106. See, like I've said many times, you need to be very methodical and precise and cautious when you see 7, because there's lots of 7s and you can't blur them together. We did that a little bit last week when we noticed we took 7 times 7 and got 49 senses, remember? And that was because those 2 7s were orthogonal, or, you know, where they weren't the same 7. So you have this particular sequence of 7 that they refer to as levels of universe reality. All right, and then in there, maybe the first thing is just notice that there's material and morontial. So, I thought I would have gone beyond that. No, again, where have you gotten to? You've gotten to the pattern universe. I mean, there can't be morontia out here if there isn't a source for morontia in there. Right, it's the pattern for everything. Everything has to be there. What matter we have out here, we talked about that earlier in the paper. The matter we have out here, the dual energy system, is, you know, derived from the threefold in there. So you have those, the 7 forms, and then they give you a little bit of numerology, as it were, with it. That there's, each of them has a father-son-spirit flavoring. There's 3 distinct phases of each. And then there's subdivisions. And remember, you know, just get so that you automatically insert understanding when you see these numbers now going forward. If they say that each of these 3 phases is divided into 70 major divisions, why 70? That's the 70-fold associativity. Because unity and individuality are 7 and 10 respectively. So 7 times 10 is 70. There's a 70-fold associativity. Every time you see 70, that's because of that 70-fold associativity. 7 times 10. There's 70 major sectors because of the 70-fold associativity. Okay. And then, so you go down from associativity to individuality, and you have a threefold energy system, 10 times 10 times 10, it's a 1,000-fold individuality. So they're just, so that's another way of reading what they just told you, is they're divided into the 70-fold associativity, and the, you know, and then subsequently into the 1,000-fold individuality. All on all those different levels, okay. You know, not to mention all of the subdivisions beyond that. So, I mean, it's extremely complex because it's the pattern universe for everything, not just the super universes, but everything that's ever going to happen in all four outer space levels and beyond those in the cosmos infinite. So there's just a gazillion, you know, different flavors to be able to presage everything that's going to ever happen.
This patterning goes beyond the grand universe into the master universe?
Yeah, and beyond that. Right. It's the pattern universe for everything. So again, see, the more you think about it, it's like, actually, it's kind of startling. Now, see, when you start to think about it like that, it's like, it's an actually a percent, a whole percent. You know, up there when they, you know, where is that? You know, that only about 1% of all planetary capacity is utilized in the work of the furthering the Father's universal plan of mortal ascension. Okay. Actually, see, you flip it all the way around. And it's like, whoa, a whole 1%.
That's a lot.
Okay. So now that you've recognized that paragraph in a way you didn't recognize it initially, what's the new more greater interpretation, you know, discover, recognize, interpret. So now when you reinterpret that paragraph, oh, actually, those who are involved in the ascension career are going to play a role in an awful lot of the cosmos infinite. Okay. Because 1% of the cosmos infinite is a big number. Okay. Even 1% of the four outer space levels is a really big number. Okay. So it gives you, you can re-understand how, you know, your destiny, see, through that picture.
Same with the finaliters. That 1/10 of 1% is a lot of finaliters.
Yeah, it's a lot of. And that's a lot of associativity with things that the finaliters are already suggestive of having by the very fact that that's not 0.00000000001%. That it's only 1/10 of 1% is a big fraction, actually, relative to the whole ball of wax.
Are they talking about space? Are they talking about power? Are they talking about influence? Are they
don't know. Value? See, you don't know. You just know. See, all they've revealed is a number,
right.
You know,
that's what I was
and it leaves you just speculating. It's like, wow, is it? Yeah, is it like spread over everything, you know, or is it more, you know, like right now we have these seven different schemes, and they're quite individuated. I mean, all seven are in each of the super universes, but one of the seven dominates each of the super universes, so it's pretty separate. Is it going to continue like that, say, when you're doing the first outer space level? Are there going to be still some pretty separate schemes, you know, that will be harmonized later on in the second outer space level age? Or, you know, or will it, you know, see, there's all those, it just brings up all these questions. How much are... you know, how much of a horizontal role are you going to play relative to a vertical role, maybe, is a way to say it. Now, see, it's like, well, I mean, I have this second phase of my finite career as a finaliter where I'm engaging the entire grand universe. So that's kind of suggested that I'm probably not going to be too circumscribed in my role out there. You know, the finaliters are working with a lot of different things. that's suggestive of a not very qualified role out there. See, which is part of the reason why the Revelators say what they say about that. It's like, what on earth is the role these beings are going to have? They seem to be being brought into relationship with almost everything that's going on in the grand universe, which is suggestive of them involved in almost everything in the next age. That's why they're scratching their heads. Okay. The only reason I was really stressing that levels of the of universe reality, seven levels of universe reality, is every once in a while they just toss that out. And it can be confusing if you think they must be referring to the seven functional levels or they must be referring to paper 106. No, it's this set. Okay.
All right. Decay and death are not a part of the cycle of life on the Havana worlds. In the central universe, the lower living things undergo the transmutation of materialization. They do change form and manifestation, but they do not resolve by process of decay and cellular death.
Okay, so that's pretty interesting. To give you a little sense of what part of material phenomena out here is also in there. You know, what part of it really is more of the universal aspect of that which is material, and what part is more qualified, specific to just being out here in the evolutionary domain. You when you get rid of decay and death, you don't get rid of the transmutation of materialization. You know, in other words, remember when we've talked about the purpose of life is its perfectibility. Right? Can someone give me the next one down? The value of life is its... Okay? The meaning of life is its... Right, yeah. And the nature of life is its variability. Okay? So what they're reminding is when you have, you know, material and moronial beings... there's still basically what we understand here, that by design and by the engagement of life animation, that body has variability built into it, you know, part of its nature. The nature of life is its variability. So that potential variability actualizes as varying material things, change. Like they're saying there, where did they say that? They do change form. They use the word change. Remember, that's when you, the varying things, when you actualize that variability, change is that bottom rung of the whole hierarchical sequence there. Okay, so we're born and we have all of this transmutation of materialization as we mature, we go from a single-celled organism, you know, to a material adult body. It's all of this transmutation of materialization, and then it reaches a peak and starts doing the whole decay and death, transmutation of materialization. Yeah, and there can be a tendency to think, oh well, the only reason that we morph like that is just because we're mortal.
Are we what they're calling the lower living things?
No. The lower living things are levels 1 and 2 here, material and morontial,
right, because
beings there.
This is pertaining to the lower living things.
Yeah, in this sequence of seven levels. Yeah, I mean, obviously the absolute, co-absolute, ultimate, whatnot, you know, are not going to be doing that. But Havana natives, which are basically material beings, are going to undergo the transmutation of materialization. They're going to morph. When they grow, their bodies will change because those material bodies have variability, and that actualizes as variation, as change. Okay? So, and just like you go through all of this transmutation of Marantia, you know, body as you go up through the local universe. Any Marantia beings there are going to be morphing. Okay. All of it is going to be the kind of in place transmutation that occurs once you're a Jerrison citizen and beyond. There's not going to be any death. You know, no Marantia body is going to have to be unplugged and then, you know, rebuilt. It's all going to be, you know, in place changing. But see, it's just, they're just, again, they're trying to really ground you. Don't, you know, it's still very literal, and it has to be. If there's transmutation of materialization out here, the pattern for it has to be in there. Nothing out here comes out of nowhere. The pattern has to be in there. Okay?
I was thinking a while back that Jesus was the, they were describing Jesus, and then when he went through these different phases of his earth life, they said that people didn't recognize him from the previous phase, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so
he had such a profound transmutation and materialization. Yeah,
yeah, there was some
to go up to go up the cosmic levels, you know, the psychic circles. Yeah, we don't have as liquid like a body as a Marantia form. You know, there's a limit to how much this body can morph, but you will take on a very much different. You notice they don't just say change form; they say and manifestation. Jesus definitively changed his manifestation as he went from seventh circler to first circler. Okay? Even, you know, and maybe even that, some of that kind of actually manipulated molecules too. You know, maybe there was a little bit of form changing, but, you know, there's a limit here. But the manifestation would have been profoundly different, so much so that, you know, they didn't even know he was the same person a lot of times. You know, he just manifested so differently than he did 10 years prior that no one connected the two, okay? You know, and so, again, that's not just, oh, wow, Jesus was so mystical and magical like that, or beings in, you know, no, that's what you're supposed to be consecrating yourself to. You should be a phenomenon that 10 years from now, people won't even know that you're Maria that's sitting there right now. You'll have such a profoundly different manifestation. But we want it to be like more like the Havona, not just what happens inexorably because of the life animation is disengaging from association with the matter, so that there's decay and death and we're coming apart in pieces, you know, the resolving. You know.
I thought that the majority of the phenomena of him changing were people physically, even his own disciples, did not recognize him, was after his resurrection when he was going through his Marantia changes.
But again, think about the whole young life.
Even before.
How, I mean,
growing up.
They never knew that was the scribe of Damascus.
Right. He had lots of careers.
Remember all the times when they say that?
That's...
I mean, yeah, he was, you know, he was a few years older.
Yeah.
You know, well, you know, and in the same way that, you know, those pictures of you when you were young, you know, are different than, you know, than your visage now. But there's, you know that that's not what they're really talking about when they're describing that. It's not because people had no notion of aging and couldn't connect the dots between a younger Jesus and an older Jesus. It was not the little bit of change of form that they're referring to. It's the dramatic change of manifestation. Okay? He just had a totally different presence about him. Yeah. Right. Okay? And that's what we should be consecrating ourselves to. That, see, is what happens when you start to consecrate your mind. Because remember, to get up the psychic circles, to go up the cosmic levels, is not just a matter of will, consecration of will. That initiates you on the seventh circle. What actually takes you up the levels is an actualization and a realization of a reformed mind, a self that's totally different than the self of the previous circle, a self that is so dramatically different and mind dominates matter, that your manifestation as a material being is just totally different than it was before. Yeah. That's what you're really talking about. And so that pattern, see, is here. We have that potential to do what Jesus did because the lower forms there do that. So Jesus could do that. If this wasn't true in Havona, Jesus wouldn't have changed like that. It's the pattern universe for everything that happens. You know, that's the cool thing. You start to really see that about the central universe. So it isn't such an abstract notion to really see how all of it is very much relevant. To understand it is to understand you and your future and your destiny, what you should be consecrating yourself to. I want to have the constitution of Havona. And it takes a twofold consecration to have the constitution of Havona. Yeah. Yeah. There was a hand somewhere, wasn't there? No? Okay. All right. So now we're going to get even a little bit more about thinking about this relationship of the pattern there to that consecration.
The Havona natives are all the offspring of the Paradise Trinity. They are without creature parents, and they are non-reproducing beings. We cannot portray the creation of these citizens of the central universe, beings who never were created. The entire story of the creation of Havona is an attempt to time-space an eternity fact which has no relation to time or space as mortal man comprehends them. But we must concede human philosophy a point of origin. Even personalities far above the human level require a concept of beginnings. Nevertheless, the Paradise Havona system is eternal.
Okay, I mean, the latter part, yeah, I think is pretty directly understandable. But just, again, why is it so important to know that the Havona natives are all the offspring of the Paradise Trinity? They let me in the door. I'm now in the central universe. I'm now in a place where the natives are the offspring, not of the Father, not of the Son, not of the Spirit, not of any combination of the three, of the fourth fact, of the Paradise Trinity. So that's what I'm up to there. Matter of fact, I finished my consecration to God the Father before I got in. I'm about the consecration to God the Mother when I'm there. God the Mother that stems from the Paradise Trinity. Okay, that's what you're doing there. You're acquiring that final measure of relationship to the actuality of harmony that is God the Mother. And for us, it's God the Supreme as God the Mother. But see, very specifically, it's not the Almighty part. It's the God the Mother part of God the Supreme that we're really focusing on. The part that stems from the Paradise Trinity. The part that isn't so directly tied to this, to the Paradise Trinity in God the Supreme, is what we've been engaging prior to getting into Havona, out in the super universes. You're engaging God the Almighty stuff out here. And you're all the way up, you know, through Uversa. But then you go and you're dealing with the other half of God the Supreme, the other half of the equation of supremacy, that personal purposive part, the God the Mother part.
Is that the Supreme Being?
No, that's the Supreme Being is what you get when you put the two together.
And that won't happen until
Grand Universe is settled in light. Yeah.
You put two what together?
The Almighty Supreme and the Universal Mother.
That's what I thought. Yeah. We'll be engaging power patterns for personal purposes.
Combined.
No. You're remember, you're God the Supreme seeking as a finaliter.
Right.
Yeah. We won't be engaging, you know, the Supreme Being until we transcend the finite.
Okay, so we'll still be engaging each one in trying to harmonize the two.
Right. So we see, look, you get sort of this booster shot, as it were, sort of getting yourself going with your relationship to God the Almighty. And you go in, you get the full relationship to God the Mother that you need. You go out, remember, you go out revealing God the Mother, because you've acquired that fullness. And you go out with that fullness of God the Mother nature, that top-down aspect of God the Supreme. When you go out as a finaliter, okay, you have the fullness of the top-down part of God the Supreme. You're revealing that. You need to finish your relationship with God the Almighty. The more quantity part, you got the quality part, the God the Mother part. You need to finish your relationship with God the Almighty, the quantity part of God the Supreme. Now, and then you put the two together in toto, and as well as everyone else, including God the Mother and God the Almighty coming together, you know, and then everything transcends. Okay. But you are, that's the main thing that you're doing in the central universe. This domain, remember, the seven circuits of Avona are not the Father, Sons, and Spirits circuits. That's the Paradise circuits. Seven Circuit of Avona is the Paradise Trinity's place. You are in relationship with the Paradise Trinity in Avona, not the Father, Son, and Spirit.
You have to recognize each one, each circuit.
And how do you do that? You go out of Avona to Paradise to try to recognize them. And then you come back into Avona. Right. Okay, it's the Paradise Trinity's domain, period. It's the billion worlds of the Paradise Trinity. The seven worlds of the Father, the seven worlds of the Son, the seven worlds of the Spirit, and the billion worlds of the Paradise Trinity.
Yeah. Who are we trying to find on the sixth circuit of Avona then?
You are... you're trying to come into a realization of supremacy on the sixth circuit. You're trying to get the requisite measure of relationship to supremacy that you need in order to be able to have any ability to find the Spirit, the Son, and the Father. Okay. You're trying to find three absolute facts, and the only way you can do it is, remember, your personality is seven-dimensional. One of those dimensions is that absolute dimension that could actually find those three absolute persons. Find those three persons absolutely. Maybe I should say it that way more technically. Okay? It's like, well, I can't be absolute yet. But you can maximize that absolute dimension. If you downstep absolute, you get ultimate. You downstep ultimate, you get supreme. See, that's what you're doing. You're maximizing up, you know, that absolute dimension up to the fullness of the finite. I mean, you got the other six dimensions that you haven't, you know, fleshed out yet. But see, in that one, you're trying to maximize that seventh dimension of your personality, because if you haven't, which is what you do on the sixth circuit, you can't find the Spirit, the Son, and the Father. So you do that first. Okay? And, you know, forever you're going to be fleshing out the other six dimensions and, you know, taking that absolute dimension from the supreme up to the ultimate and then on beyond that, too. Yeah, the key is that one dimension of your recognition ability, your personality, is you're going to try to turn to the Spirit and recognize, you know, the Infinite Spirit, and then the Son, yeah, and then the Father. Okay, yeah, so let's see. Right, were you ready to start that one? I just want to make sure we haven't left behind anything. I got kind of off track there. Let's see, so, right, so that very important fact that this is the Trinity's domain. That's what you're efforting there. That's the context in which you do specific things like realization of supremacy and stuff like that. But it's all in the context of a relationship to the Trinity, of acquiring a greater and greater relationship to God the Mother, that which stems from the Paradise Trinity. Okay, not God the Father. That stems from the first center. God the Mother stems from the Paradise Trinity. Okay, so some more here.
The natives of Havana live on the billion spheres of the central universe in the same sense that other orders of permanent citizenship dwell on their respective spheres of nativity. As the material order of sonship carries on the material, intellectual, and spiritual economy of a billion local systems in a super universe, so in a larger sense do the Havana natives live and function on the billion worlds of the central universe. You might possibly regard these Havoners as material creatures, in the sense that the word material could be expanded to describe the physical realities of the divine universe.
And the reason that there's quotes on material there, it's like, well, why do they need quotes? I mean, right over here in the list, you know, they said material, morontial, spiritual. I mean, why do they need to put it in quotes? I mean, it's like, I understand that it's this threefold, you know, energy system, so it's not the same twofold matter. It's like, why are you putting this in quotes? I mean, you seem to be being pedantic here or something.
Material, like we would understand it.
No, it's to go beyond, remember, yeah, we can... is a threefold actuality, and there's many different ways to understand that threefoldness. One way is matter, mind, and spirit. What's one of the kind of overarching philosophical ways of understanding that? Individuality, associativity, unity. Okay, that's really what they're getting at. In the sense that individuality could be expanded to describe the physical realities of the divine universe. Because we have the kind of individuality that you have there is way transcendent of anything we understand now. It's the quote-unquote material, the individuality likeness there is very transcendent. It's much more plugged into a whole than the kind of individuality that we experience here, which can easily be thought to be an island universe. Why has God abandoned me? I'm a speck of dust in an infinite, you know, that sort of thinking about individuality, okay? So that's why it's in quotes. To remember that matter fundamentally is the substance that expresses individuality. Spirit is a substance that expresses unity. And the expression of individuality varies depending upon the place and time. The expression of unity varies. Okay, but unity is unity, and individuality is unity. You know, to see those more transcendent philosophical, that philosophical pattern as being behind the more scientific, factual substance pattern. Okay, matter, mind, and spirit. Individuality, associativity, unity. Okay, and we'll pick up on that a little bit more as they go forward here.
There is a life that is native to Havana and possesses significance in and of itself. Havaners minister in many ways to paradise descenders and to super universe ascenders. But they also live lives that are unique in the central universe and have relative meaning quite apart from either paradise or the super universes.
Okay, and I just remembered one other thing I forgot to bring up there. But think of it in the context of what we just read there. So you very much have, a phenomenon of, you know, a day in a life of phenomenon that's going on there in Havana, that it's not just all about others. You know, it has an integrity of its own. And that's important to understand it as a pattern, okay? So that you have the patterning going in the right direction. You know, it's not from out here to in there. It's from in there to out here. So the fact that, see, it has an integrity that's independent of there being an out here means that what's out here, you understand that as being derived from a pre-existent eternalized fact that is, in some ways, fine unto itself. Yeah. And you downstep that. Now it's not alone. And you bring what you expressed outward back in through this whole climbing up through the super local universe and super universe. And then you bring them together. And like we were saying, I mean, not only do you benefit from them, but see, they become more than they were. Because what was downstepped has now climbed back up. Okay. So in that mode of appreciating that they're a source, okay, that source gets most specifically expressed in the pattern they were just saying. There's a billion Havona worlds, and there's 7 billion local systems. Each Havona world is a sevenfold pattern for 7 local systems, one in each super universe. Okay, so like if you just take the 7th super universe, there's a billion local systems. Each local system in our super universe is tied to one and only one Havona world, one-to-one correspondence. This, you know, the local system of Satania is a downstepped expression of one of the Havona worlds.
Is my math correct, and am I thinking this correctly, that we have a sister system in every other super universe?
Right. See, so there's a sister system. We're one fold of a sevenfold expression.
Right. That's what I thought.
And those beings in those 6 other local systems are all climbing up too. And we meet, and for the first time in the central universe, we can begin to bring all 7 facets of what we are together. So a lot of what you are going to be, you can't do unto yourself, because, you know,
have 1/7.
Right, 6/7 of what you are is not accessible in and of yourself. You need them, you know, and so you all come together, and then you can all transcend, you know, that separation in which you began. Okay, you can become more whole, like the whole. Remember, you're trying to acquire a relationship to God the Mother. Okay, there was something over here.
Yeah. Well, okay. I was thinking that's why we have to plug into the individuality of the whole to really understand things, to really realize things. And that's why the wisest people on the planet, directing affairs on the planets, like Daniel, look to God.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that, you know, and we're just trying to be a little less mystical about that notion of looking to God. I mean, literally, it's about establishing a relationship to the upper domain of your inner life, to the objective domain. By grace, you've been given a relationship to the whole. If you choose to consecrate yourself to that potential relationship, you know, you will have the objectivity, the perspective that you need. You know, so specifically, what you mean by looking up to God is much more than just a consecration of the will. See, it's that consecrating of the mind to take your raw, unpurposed self and purpose it, to get it up there, get your consciousness, more and more of your consciousness up there in direct harmony with the cosmos. Okay, let's see now. So, rather than just telling you directly, they kind of have that indirect way of pointing to this connection, because they want you to sort of put the final piece together. Oh, I get it. There's 7 billion local systems. that's the pattern universe thing in a very direct way. One world for each local system. Okay.
As the worship of the faith sons of the evolutionary worlds ministers to the satisfaction of the universal Father's love, so the exalted adoration of the Havona creatures satiates the perfect ideals of divine beauty and truth. As mortal man strives to do the will of God, These beings of the central universe live to gratify the ideals of the Paradise Trinity. In their very nature, they are the will of God. Man rejoices in the goodness of God. Havoners exult in the divine beauty, while you both enjoy the ministry of the liberty of living truth.
Okay, so this is a really key paragraph to understanding this fundamental reciprocal relationship between in there and out here. Out here, we're going from individuality up through associativity toward unity. And when we've done that, and we're on Universa, completed that, then we go in there, and like I've said, you flip it around. The ceiling becomes the floor. Okay? And you begin anew upon this newfound foundation of unity, and you go up through associativity to a transcendent individuality. Material in quotes. Right? Okay? To a transcendent. And what does that look like? You know, when you talk about individuality, associativity, unity, well, one of those threefold expressions is beauty, truth, goodness. So what does that look like? So we are striving from beauty through truth, like they're saying, you know, that's the, you know, both enjoy the ministry, the liberty of living truth, that fluid domain that allows you to morph up through. So we're going from beauty up through truth towards goodness. That's what we're doing. But they're doing the reciprocal. They're starting with goodness and going up through truth to beauty. Okay? Because they're doing the more motherlike expression. Okay? And notice in their very nature, they are the will of God. And so again, what did you have to complete before you could get into Havona? Perfection of purpose. You have to perfectly consecrated your will to the perfect will of God the Father. Okay, you've achieved that through growth. That's their starting point. They're given perfection of purpose is built into them, is eventuated into their starting point. They build up from there. You grew up to there, but then you're going to strike step with their efforts of building up from that. Okay? Again, that, you know, to be able to just very, you know, precisely understand that. You know, and that what that literally means is that out here we have spirit mind womb that we're in. Mind is the foundation with spirit added on top of it. In there, the womb is mind-spirit. Spirit's the foundation, mind added on top of that. Okay? It's a reciprocal of what you experience here, where you're striving up through mind towards spirit. It's a reciprocal there. You start with the spirit, and you're striving up through mind, and you're going, to what then? Yeah, see? To a whole newfound appreciation of the glory that is individuality. This thing that so many spiritual idealists are trying to somehow sever a connection to. It's actually the transcendent destiny. Yeah.
Just briefly, the Havonaers do not come back to the seven super universes to get the experience that we are bringing up to them. They learn through us.
Yep.
And they're learning from the paradise descenders that come into Havona.
Yeah, and they're also there's an ability to acquire a greater nature just through relationship, as we're just about to read, to Havona itself. You know, separate from ascenders and descenders, just their relationship to Havona itself. To see, and they're trying to actually, you know, use words to get you to see that more clearly. You know, when you see rejoices, you know, like and exalt, you know, and it's like, well, one of the, I guess, exaltation, that's just kind of rejoicing. Well, yeah, but what literally, what does exalt mean? It means to leap up. Okay? See, the Havoners leap up toward beauty. Like we're reaching up towards goodness, faith grasp, reaching up towards goodness. They're leaping, they're reaching up, striving upward towards beauty. Goodness is their given.
Okay? Would you mind using the words adjective and noun when you talk about source center and center source and spirit mind and mind spirit? Because somehow when you're emphasizing it, you know which one is the noun and which one is the adjective.
But they aren't really. You know, you don't, when you say center source, you know, I mean, it's a compound noun.
Pretend one's an adjective.
Right. I was just going to say that. See, it's that noun that you're adding on is qualifying like an adjective does.
Yes.
Okay.
So you're adding the adjective to a noun. You're not adding a noun.
But remember, it's you don't want to think of it too literally as an adjective, because it's not because when I say center source,
which is the qualifier.
Center. When I say center source, you know, I don't just mean I have a different flavor of source. See, that's the problem. You don't want to think of it literally as an adjective. It's not flavoring the noun. Okay? It's augmenting the noun with another noun. You start with sourceness and you add centerness to it. That's a center source. Okay? It's both of those things. It's both center and source, not just a flavor of source. It's both center and source. The question is, which is the foundation? Which is, you know, the basement level, and which is the first floor? Which is the foundation? You know, the second word is the foundation word, the root word, the basis for what you're trying to understand. So do you start with a center and add source to it? Or do you start with a source and add center to it? Do you start with a creative spirit that's spread uniformly and then she gets kind of more thicker in the center? So she starts as a source and gets and adds a center-like nature to her? Or is it the other way around? Okay. That's the difference.
So with the creative spirit, that would be a center source.
The creative mother spirit is a center source because it's fundamentally a mother phenomenon that's coming down from the Paradise Trinity. The Paradise Trinity is the pattern center source. The first source and center is the pattern, okay, right, in the order, source and center. Take the and out, put a hyphen in, source, hyphen, center. It's the pattern, source, center. The center, the first center part of the first source and center is the root. And you've added first source onto it. It's center first, source second.
Maybe we can get some crayons.
It's the rock of everything first, and then it's a reservoir for personality second. It's what everything, you know, is in orbit about, quote unquote, you know, revolves around first, and then it's a source also for personality. Okay. Yeah. So that it's just which is the foundational element. What do you build your understanding upon? Okay, so just that just to see that's what they're trying to get you to understand, is that you've reciprocated your whole relationship between matter, mind, and spirit, between individuality, associativity, and unity. You've flipped them around. Okay? And that's what happens when you're, well, that's the difference between consecrating to the goal of the Father compared to consecrating to the goal of the mother.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, and the very fact that there's a billion worlds tied to the Trinity, see, kind of speaks to that individuality has some really profound transcendent relationship to the Paradise Trinity. It takes a billion worlds just to express it, see, this transcendent individuality. All right.
Havoners have both optional present and future unrevealed destinies, and there is a progression of native creatures that is peculiar to the central universe, a progression that involves neither ascent to paradise nor penetration of the super universes. This progression to higher Havona status may be suggested as follows. 1. Experiential progress outward from the first to the seventh circuit. 2. Progress inward from the seventh to the first circuit. And 3. Intra-circuit progress, progression within the worlds of a given circuit.
Okay, so see, Don, how they're pointing out? See, independent of ascenders and descenders, there are all kinds of differentials in the central universe. It's not a uniform domain. It's full of differentials. And it's so replete with differentials that the differentials are different whether you go out in or in out. They're totally different experiences.
Did you see a
kaleidoscope? Yeah. So that's what they're getting at. And then the other little thing in there is there's this very precise use of words in the book. I've pointed out there's that you have the perfection leg of your finite career, and then you have the completion leg. First half is perfection, second half is completion. Okay, and there's two words that they associate with those two legs. There's ascension to perfection, and then there's penetration. That's how they use that. See, nor penetration of the super universes. And then penetration to completion. So when you see the word penetration, that's the horizontal heading towards completion. Ascension is the vertical towards perfection. Okay? It's very important that you distinguish that, or you'll misinterpret several sentences in the book if you don't appreciate that. If you're talking about spirit-fused mortals in a local universe, they ascend and are inducted into the Nebadon core of perfection, and then they penetrate the whole local universe and then are inducted into the Nebadon core of completion. Okay? Ascension, penetration, perfection, completion. Kind of just burn that in your memory so that you can understand the sentences.
It's interesting. People who favor their individuality consciousness like to project. They're interested in everything,
mm-hmm.
and get diffused in this, in the
mm-hmm.
horizontal plane of things.
They're getting ahead of themselves. That's second. You need to do this first, be an individual that's ascending, then try to spread yourself out to the four corners. If you do it the other way, you'll achieve neither. You'll actually lose yourself. You'll just diffuse yourself into the whole. If you don't ascend first. Yeah.
Because you want to get to the highest, I mean, what's happening mechanically, the way I understand it, is you want to get to the highest level of your consciousness first and then spread out at that level. Not spread out when you're down these lower domains, because then you're just bringing in the subconscious and all that crap that you want to get rid of.
Right, there's a lot of...
Get away from it.
A lot of things like that come into play, right? Yeah. You'll call that which is merely mind, spirit, and all kinds of things, and you'll try to go, into this, mystical journey somewhere in the mindal space.
So your
concept
of God is important. That's your highest concept of spirit, of the spirit realm, personalized.
And what gets you going up first? It's your thoughts, not your feelings, that lead you Godward. Take you up. If you want to ascend, you can't do it with feelings. If you try to do it with feelings, you won't go up. You'll diffuse out.
Right.
You have to have consecrated thoughts. That's what gets you up the cosmic levels, the psychic circles.
Not
all
right?
In addition to the Havona natives, the inhabitants of the central universe embrace numerous classes of patterns, pattern beings, for various universe groups, advisors, directors, and teachers of their kind and to their kind throughout creation. All beings in all universes are fashioned along the lines of some one order of pattern creature living on some one of the billion worlds of Havona. Even the mortals of time have their goal and ideals of creature existence on the outer circuits of these pattern spheres on high.
The first part, when you're talking about pattern beings, can someone tell me an example of that? There's a group of beings in a paper written by an archangel, a paper that a lot of people like to read. The Celestial Artisans. Okay, is an example of, you know, when they're when you read that Celestial Artisan paper, one of the first things they tell you is the original ones, the pattern Celestial Artisans, were in the pattern universe. It's an example of what they're alluding to there. And they're just saying, that's just one. They're all like that. You know, the original Celestial Artisans, see, were in the central universe and went out. Okay.
There's a pattern for every one of us.
Yeah. And that last part, even the mortals of time have their goal and ideals of creature existence on the outer circuits of these pattern spheres on high. Why the outer circuits? Because especially the outer three circuits are the circuits that are most directly related to you mindily, the kind of mindal self that we have. That's why they're referring to the outer circuits. See, so it's one of those clues, like, well, what are they? Why just the outers? You know, once you unpack Havona, you understand what they're referring to. It's basically those outer three circuits that have the mindedness that's sort of directly related to what your mindedness. Okay.
That doesn't have to do with 1, 2, and 3 brain, does it?
No. Okay. No. Transcendent of that.
Then there are those beings who have attained the Universal Father and who are entitled to go and come, who are assigned here and there in the universes along missions of special service. And on every Havona world will be found the attainment candidates, those who have physically attained the central universe, but who have not yet achieved that spiritual development which will enable them to claim paradise residence. The infinite spirit is represented on the Havona worlds by a host of personalities, beings of grace and glory, who administer the details of the intricate intellectual and spiritual affairs of the central universe. On these worlds of divine perfection, they perform the work indigenous to the normal conduct of this vast creation, and in addition, carry on the manifold tasks of teaching, training, and ministering to the enormous numbers of ascendant creatures who have climbed to glory from the dark worlds of space.
So that last line is a lot like what Pam was thinking early on there, the difference between what we will be, you know, settled in light and life, as it were, internally. You know, they're trying, you know, they're speaking to that. You know, you're in glory now, and you're in the central universe, and you've come from, you know, dark worlds, and that's not, you know, in general, not just worlds that have suffered rebellion or default or something. They're all dark. You know, the most transcendent world out here is dark compared to the glory that is the central universe. Throw a little bit of a factual tidbit in there. When they're talking about these children of the infinite spirit, you know, you say, oh, must be talking about angels. They're kind of alluding to the primary ones that we know about, that are revealed to us, that are in the central universe. You have the secondary Supernaphim and the tertiary Supernaphim. The tertiary Supernaphim are the ones who perform the work indigenous to the normal conduct of this vast creation. That's the tertiary Supernaphim, the angels that are created by the circuit spirits. And then the secondary Supernaphim, they're created by the master spirits, are the ones that carry on the manifold tasks of teaching, training, and ministering to the enormous numbers of ascendant creatures.
You know, the paper on those angels, that's where they really take you through those circuits.
Yeah.
You think you're going to learn about the angels, and what you really get are the circuits.
Right. Yeah, and that's a very good point. I mean, it's a reason for to justify why I just brought this up. a lot of the story of the central universe and how it relates to you is told there.
Yeah.
You know, in going through the secondary supernovae. If you want to jump ahead and read those, those are a lot of fun.
There are numerous groups of beings native to the Paradise Havona system that are in no way directly associated with the ascension scheme of creature perfection attainment. Therefore, are they omitted from the personality classifications presented to the mortal races? Only the major groups of superhuman beings and those orders directly connected with your survival experience are herein presented. Havona teems with the life of all phases of intelligent beings, who there seek to advance from lower to higher circuits in their efforts to attain higher levels of divinity realization and enlarged appreciation of supreme meanings, ultimate values, and absolute reality.
Okay, just a couple more little things here before we wrap up. One, just notice how they're stressing an awful lot about what they don't reveal here. And you might say, well, why right here? You know, why in this particular context are they stressing that? Because of it's very much in play when you start talking about the infinite spirit is represented on the Havona worlds by a host of personalities. Now, that's where it's really going to be very definitively the case that there are going to be just gazillions of creatures created by the infinite spirit that are not revealed in here, you know, that don't have anything directly to do with the ascension scheme. Okay, so that's why it's this particular context that they're stressing that. The beings that are more tied to the Father and the Son just aren't as multitudinous, you know, as what comes from the God of action. That's the whole point. That's where the action is actually manifested, through the God of action. So that's where the incredible diversity, you know, really manifests. Okay. And then that last, look at that wonderful little thing. Look at how what they put as a bottom line. Did you notice that? Okay, you have meanings and values, you know? Yeah, and he's like, oh, I recognize that sequence. And supreme, ultimate, absolute, oh, I recognize that sequence. And they're putting the two together. Okay? A lot of times we don't say all four. You know, there are four blocks here. It's not just threefold actuality, but it's threefold actuality with unity. There's things, meanings, values, and then reality. See? They're using that sequence here. Meanings, values, reality. That's the fourth one in that sequence. Okay? So it's only when you put things, meanings, and values together do you have reality. That's what personality is supposed to be doing. Realityizing, putting those three together. Not just values, okay, but things, meanings, and values to get reality. And then in that sequence of supreme, ultimate, absolute. This is a really fun thing they're doing here. And it already came up tonight. In order to try to understand your question about the sixth circuit, I had to start talking about this seven dimensions of personality. Okay? Those three finite dimensions, which is, you know, remember, you're even as a finaliter through trillions and trillions of years, you're still a finite being. Okay? Now, that's the type of mindful self, you know, that you are, where meanings directly are. And you're working on supremacizing those meanings. So that the supreme meanings, see, that's tied to those three finite dimensions of your personality. In terms of the context that they're talking about here, you know, the finite age. And then ultimate values, those three absonite dimensions of your personality, absonite transcends finite. Values transcend meanings in this sequence like this that we're thinking. So those three absonite dimensions are giving you a sense of connection to transcendent values. What lies beyond supreme meanings is ultimate values that can be used to build a new superadditive consequence. Because you know, the superadditive consequence of the relationship between things and values is meanings. So you have this, you know, at the same time that you're building up the meanings, you're already beginning to do that in a higher transcendent context of ultimate values, and a future foundation. Yeah. You know, you're taking supreme things and supreme values and getting supreme meanings now, okay? Then you'll be taking ultimate things and ultimate values and getting ultimate meanings, okay? But you have you always have an insight that transcends your direct, you know, wisdom consciousness, okay? So there's always an ultimate level that's transcendent of the supreme. And then there's that absolute dimension, see? Of that personality that is directly tied to the absolute reality. I don't finitely or absolutely or even co-absolutely know that there's a God. I absolutely know there's a God, and I'm not delusional. I absolutely know there's a God because I've been given the ability to absolutely know that, to have an absolute relationship to reality, that absolute dimension of my personality. Okay? I just have to guard against not using that for things it's not appropriate for, absolutizing a whole bunch of things that I don't have an absolute relationship to. At best, I can have a supreme relationship to. But there is one thing that I am justified in having an absolute certitude about, that which is absolute, which I can connect to with my absolute dimension of my personality. There absolutely is a God, and I'm absolutely son of that Father, you know, and I absolutely will survive. No real harm can befall me, you know. You want to have that, you know, use that absolute certitude of potential, what it's meant for, to go from mere faith grasping to trust, you know. Do like we've been talking about. What you're just initially reaching up to, do a chin up. Put the ceiling on the floor. Stand on it. Mature your faith grasp into a trust foundation. Okay? Start to do the Havona constitution thing now. Stand on trust. Stand on what you're initially reaching up to. And build something greater on that. A newfound individuality, like we're just referring to, an objective self, a purposed self. You know, it can only be built upon a trust foundation. You know, if you're just the adjutant self, basically, you're reaching up, you know, grasping up. Get yourself up. Stand on what you're initially reaching up to. Go beyond being just a child of God. Begin to realize that you're a cosmic citizen. See, that's another way of expressing that. Begin to transition from the fourth epical revelation to the fifth epical revelation. Yeah. The fifth epical revelation is founded on trust. Okay. The fourth is founded on faith. And it's very interesting, see, that Melchizedek came to reveal trust and faith, it says, in that order. Faith is the foundation word. Trust is added onto it if you can. Okay? Michael comes to really solidify that foundation of faith. Now the fifth is here, so that you can really start to build trust upon that faith, to add to it. And to take the fourth epical revelation of love and service and put them together as loving service. an adjective, and a noun. You know, a new flavor of service. You know, loving service. Spiritualized, pragmatic behavior. Okay, bringing the spiritual and the material together. Loving service. You can only do that if you begin to mature your faith into a living faith, into trust. Okay. So, you see, there's just all kinds of potential reflection. You know, go back and read these things again yourself. See how much you can you know, start a discourse of understanding with yourself about how many things the pattern universe descriptions are telling you about what you should be trying to do with your life, how to constitute your life so that you have the constitution of Havona, not the illusions of Havona, where it's purely spiritual, but the real Havona, the reality that's the harmony of those three things. All right, let's take a moment here and reflect on that.